the number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
On the nighttime,
it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, how about that? Villanova, national champs, beating North Carolina dramatic fashion. The buzzer-beating three by Chris Jenkins, lifting Villanova over North Carolina in a back-and-forth game. Villanova led by 10 with about 5 minutes to go. North Carolina made a run. Marcus Page, a brilliant three-point shot. Had it hung in the air, had to readjust, knocked it down. That looked like it was going to be the shot of the game. If it had gone into overtime, that could have been the shot of the game. But Villanova, with about 4.5 seconds left, Archie Diacono got the ball, got it into the front court, got to the top, kicked it over to Jenkins, who was open enough for, got a great look for three, knocked it down. Villanova's the champs. Again, back and forth game. Best of all time? Well, it's too early to tell. Good game, entertaining game, that I will not argue. I don't think things have to be the best ever for us to put it in a real good context. I think this was a fun, entertaining game. Teams did some things I was a little surprised with. Teams failed at a couple of things. I thought there were things that North Carolina did that hurt them. I thought there were some things Villanova did that hurt them holding on to a 10-point lead. But that's expected in a game. Not every game is going to be perfect. You got to go up and down. You're going to have the ebb and flow. And this certainly had it. Is it better because it had a buzzer-beating three? Well, even if it didn't have that, I still think it was one of the better entertaining finals that we've had. We don't normally get a game where we have that kind of back and forth, where it's really good versus good, not struggle versus struggle or sloppy versus sloppy. UConn-Butler a couple of years ago was that kind of game. I was trying to put this into context. I was trying to figure out where this would rank. And I think a lot of people gravitate towards a buzzer beater because that is drama, that is excitement, and that gives a game definition. It's easy to put a game in the history books. You know, let's say you get a game where a team wins by five. It was an amazing back-and-forth battle. But in the end, the team wins by five because they hit a couple of free throws at the end. They don't turn the ball over, and there's really nothing dramatic. It just was a very, very good game that just ended in a five-point win. Hard to define. Really, really hard to sort of peg and say, well, how do we remember this game? What do we remember about it? It's hard to do. This is a little easier. Because we have a buzzer-beating three-pointer that might end up being one of the more memorable shots that we ever get in the NCAA tournament. I was kind of making a joke tonight on social media about, does this shot now finally relieve us of the Leitner shot as the definition of March? And you got Lorenzo Neal at NC State game in 83, but every March we get Leitner, right? Get the ball to Leitner. God! And in every March you have to put up with that. And Leitner's absolutely legacy. I mean, it's one of the greatest moments in tournament history. Does this have that same kind of punch? I don't know if it does. I got to be honest with you. I don't know if it does. This is a buzzer beater to win a national title. But if you keep watching that play over and over again, it looks rather routine. I'm sorry. It looks rather routine. I'm surprised that Archie Diacono was able to get the ball over the timeline in a quick enough fashion. Now, I know North Carolina, see, because Adam and I were talking about this before the show. If you're North Carolina, you can't press too much on that because it can be broken, and if it's broken, it ends up being an easy point. But you also don't want to make it easy like it looked. So it's like this kind of combination. It's really hard to defend it because if you put too many people on the front, you know, on the backcourt, on the ball. And again, Villanova is good enough at maneuvering the basketball and breaking press that if they break press, you're in big trouble because they're going to score. But you don't want to make it too easy because Jenkins basically got a perfect look. It wasn't like he threw it from half court. And it wasn't like he threw it from 35 feet out. He was just trailing the play. Diacono got him the ball. And he didn't have a serious defender on him. He got an excellent look, knocked it down. And then it becomes action-reaction. So it wasn't in that vein of, I still can't figure out how they did this. Because if you watch it, you know exactly how they did this. Like the Leitner shot, which I do hope they eventually supplant. The Leitner shot is interesting because there's so much going into it. 2-point-something seconds remaining. Grant Hill is on the inbound pass. Whatever, for whatever reason, Rick Pitino decides not to guard the inbound pass, making at least the pass a little bit more difficult. They have to throw it all the way down the court. Leitner is open. He knows he's got enough time once he catches the ball to fake and then turn around and knock it down. But then turning around and knocking it down and giving Duke the win, it also made him perfect from the floor. I think he was 11 for 11 from the floor in that game. This is going to be a historic game. We're going to remember this for a long time because you just don't forget buzzer beaters that win national titles. And you don't forget buzzer beaters that came after one of the better shots that you're going to see in tournament history and what Marcus Paige did knocking down the three. However, I don't know if it has that same like NC State feel to it. It still was a great finish. Great finish. And I'm glad it finished that way because it really was a heavyweight fight. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Josh Martin is going to join us. We'll talk some NBA with him. He's from Bleacher Report. You know, we've only got 5 games remaining on the regular season. 5. That's it. And those of us who have teams in the playoffs will enjoy having teams in the playoffs. And those of us who don't have teams in the playoffs, Bulls.
Me. Stupid
we'll
Bulls.
We'll just sit back and enjoy the rest of the way. I do not know how to put into words the disappointment both the Bulls and the Wizards have given fans this year.
It's amazing. It's
really,
really, really amazing. I mean, I'm speaking for a Bulls fans. Just injuries did affect them in the middle of the season, but just everything that's gone on is just awful. Just a complete joke. I honestly don't know what they're going to do.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the Wizards were a second round team last year, were they not?
I believe so, yeah.
And they're not in the playoffs either.
Yeah, and they're not even in the Western Conference.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
In the East.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like in the West you got to be like decent. Right. You know, to make the playoffs. In the East, it's gotten better, but again, they're not asking much. To get you into the conference playoffs, they're not asking you to go to win 60% of your games. If you win 51 or 52, shouldn't you be around the eighth spot? I think a winning percentage of like 53% is good enough.
Yeah, it should be.
There's no excuse why the Bulls and Wizards should not have that record.
No, it's just bad from a Bulls standpoint. I don't know what they're gonna do.
Well, listen, I'm a Celtics fan. I've been a Celtics fan since the early 80s with Larry Bird. I don't expect much, but I just enjoy watching them in the playoffs. I just love watching them in the playoffs. I don't care if it leads to a first-round exit or a 4-game sweep. It's just when it's basketball playoff time, that's where I want to be. I remember one time my wife was getting ready for church one Sunday, and I said, hey, I'm going to stay home. She says, why? And I go, because we were living in Colorado, so we lived in Mountain Time. And I said, today is a game 7 between the Celtics and the Atlanta Hawks. And it was the year the Celtics won the championship. And I think they got pushed to 7 games by the Hawks or whatnot. And I said, I really need to watch this. I said, you don't understand. My team's been irrelevant for 20 years. 20 years! Since Larry and the Big Three, they've been nowhere near the playoffs. You know, Reggie Lewis tragically passed away in the early 90s. That coupled with the Len Bias death in the 80s, it had just been a bad 2 decades for Celtics basketball. And now they were in the playoffs, and I had to watch them. And I remember, my wife's like, "Yeah, fine. That's fine. I completely understand." And she told some of the people that we went to church with, and they all got it immediately. They were all like, absolutely. I can't believe he's not here. I'm glad he's not here. He should absolutely watch the Celtics because they knew the Celtics had been terrible and playoff basketball is the best. It's absolutely the best. I remember being a kid being really nervous for Celtics playoff games, like against the Sixers and against like Dominic Wilkins and like Bernard King and like Isaiah Thomas. I remember when Larry Bird stole the inbound pass against the Pistons in 1987. I remember I was tutoring a girl in high school, the prettiest girl in school, by the way. And she, you know, her dad was a big Celtics fan, and we kind of stopped her studies to go watch it. And we were just so depressed because the Celtics are going to lose. They go back to Detroit, lose that. And then Larry steals the pass. It's like there's nothing better than playoff basketball. Again, Josh Martin coming up at the bottom of the hour. Coming up, Adam's news of the day as we roll along through the night on Championship Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Try not to take myself too seriously sometimes, but it's hard. That's why I love this segment. It's Adam's news of the day with that beautiful Peanuts music in the background. By the way, I saw the Peanuts movie over the weekend.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, look, my wife was home. She's been flying back and forth on the weekend, so she was like, I want to watch a family movie. And I'm like, all right, look, we've got a 14-year-old son. We've got a 9-year-old daughter. That's not easy to do, to try to get everybody in. Like, my son wants, you know, war movies and whatnot and action-packed movies. My daughter wants, you know, cartoons. So I told everybody, we're settling on the Peanuts. Everybody likes Charlie Brown. We're watching it. About halfway through, my wife just quiet room. We're all watching the movie. Kind of laughing, you know, chuckling. Out of nowhere, my wife goes, watching Charlie Brown makes me depressed. I'm like, yeah, that's right. He's so sad.
Yeah.
He's so pathetic. But it was pretty good. I mean, for, you know, trying to make some, you know, make everybody happy in the house, it was pretty good. So, all right, first story on Adam's news of the day. What's on the agenda tonight?
All right, this is a sports story that just kind of frustrates me as an NFL fan.
Okay.
Roger Goodell was at a luncheon in Jacksonville and basically said he definitely sees playoff expansion coming at some point in the near future.
Why?
He sees two teams, thinks there could be even four.
Oh, come on.
I love the way it is right now.
Perfect.
12 teams. I don't want to see half the team in the playoff or half the league in the playoffs.
Listen, I'm okay if my team doesn't make the playoffs.
Right.
I know what the rules are. I don't want to hear it like, well, some divisions are tougher. This all comes out in the wash. You know what the rules are. You know how this goes. I don't need 8-8 and 7-9 teams in the playoffs. It's exactly what you're going to get if you start expanding this.
If we had 40 teams, I would still be fine with 12.
I'm totally fine with this. I don't need more. I understand all he sees is revenue. He doesn't see destruction of the product.
I know. And that's what's very frustrating.
It drives me crazy.
As a leader of this whole league.
Don't destroy your product for the sake of always searching for more revenue. I get you need revenue. I understand it's a business. Don't lecture me on capitalism. I get it. But this is going to kill your product. You don't need bad football teams in the playoffs. That's a good story. I'm glad you brought that one up.
All right. The next one is something we kind of hit on real fast last night because I had it for last night. We kind of ran out of time. Philadelphia Flyers game I think it was last week, an escalator that was going down, something malfunctioned and the escalator went really fast. So it was moving down really fast.
Oh my God. With a lot of people on
it? Yes, with basically, I'm guessing they were all leaving.
Yeah, like baseball crowd.
Yeah.
Like loaded escalator.
Right, so they're coming from maybe like the top level, the top bowl, and they're coming down. And it just turned into a big pileup. People couldn't stop. You know, there's people jumping over the sides to avoid landing on the big pile of people.
That's frightening.
And it just, it goes really fast. I'm about to tweet it out right now so you can see it.
That is frightening.
It's crazy.
Now, my wife has a fear of escalators. And I don't know why she has this fear of escalators, but ever since I've met her, and even to this day, we've been married close to 18 years. She hates escalators. If she has a choice between them or stairs, she takes the stairs. She thinks that they'll go flat and everyone will just fall down like a slide and everyone will just get hurt. And I used to pick on her all the time for this kind of stuff. I'm mean sometimes. When we lived in Vegas, we would go to casinos, and you know how they have the moving walkways, like at airports? that don't go up and down, but just go like you just walk along straight and you ride the moving escalator. We would get on those, and I would joke with her that I have a fear of these because I'm afraid they'll turn into stairs. And she always hated those jokes. And then one day on the news, there was an escalator that did turn into a slide where people got seriously hurt, and she never let me forget it. She constantly brings it up. That is frightening. So it was going pretty quick.
Yeah, I just tweeted it if you want to pull it up and see it
real
fast.
I will put it up.
Yes, it's moving at a very high rate of speed. And I don't know what I would do if I was, you know, say one of the top people and I'm seeing this big pileup happen. Because it's not like you can just jump on the railing because the railing's moving also at the same speed as the stairs.
Oh, my God, so, I am watching it. Now, you gotta. I know it's bad radio to be like, look what I'm watching on video, but that is incredible. It's just going quick and everyone's just falling down at the bottom. There's nobody can move.
Yeah, there's people jumping over the sides at the bottom. They're laying on the ground. They can't, I mean, I can't put a speed on this, but it's just very crazy. If you want to go to Y Sports Radio, at Y Sports Radio or at Adam G. Sager, I just posted the link.
All right, and the thing is, the escalator is like throwing people into the pile.
Right.
It's just churning people and throwing them into this pile.
Because like I said, the railings move just as fast as the stairs. They're set up to run the same speed. So if you jump onto the railing, you're going just as fast down, just on a smaller track now.
That's frightening. They did have an accident at Coors Field about 10, 11 years ago where an escalator collapsed too many people were on it. I'm surprised that there aren't more accidents on these things. I'm always afraid of getting eaten, like my shoelace getting caught.
Right.
Like, that's the thing I always worry about.
Yeah,
like it gets
your
caught.
Jeans. Like, I wear longer jeans.
And then they say, like, you can't get it out. Like,
right.
It's so strong that you have to cut it out because it's not going to give it back up. You can't just pull it out. It'll just churn that thing and just destroy your clothes and you'll get trapped. And it'll start to rip at your skin. And I'm making a horror movie, ain't I?
Yes, basically.
On escalators. All right, what is your third story of the night?
Last story. This is Spokane Valley in Washington. And I just want to know if this is something you've even considered. You would never do it, but if you've considered this. At a local fast food restaurant, a man who always complains about his orders being wrong went in to, again, complain like he always does, and they're used to it. Well, he ended up getting physical with the female manager.
Uh-oh.
Because basically his burger... He didn't have the right burger, even though it's just something he does because he wants free food, and they know it. He orders, they give him exactly what he orders, and then he says he ordered something else, so he'll get free fries.
Oh, I got you. I've done this.
Yes.
When I waited tables in college, we had people like this.
They've dealt with him before. Well, this time, all of a sudden, he got physical and threw some punches at a female
Ooh.
Manager and some other people that were working there. But If this was him just getting the wrong order, I've been very frustrated.
Yeah, there's nothing worse.
Yeah, especially if sometimes
at a
restaurant,
anyway.
It. Sometimes I don't check it. So I drive home, especially if it's through the drive-thru. I drive home and I get there and I'm just like, you just want to go back and strangle somebody sometimes just because you're so frustrated.
Oh,
want what you want.
You order food at the drive-thru, you get it, and you drive away. Didn't Joe Pesci have a famous line about drive-thrus
yes.
in Lethal Weapon movie?
What was it?
I think about that every time.
Yeah.
Every time I go and I order something and I get stuff for the family and I go back and my wife's like, "Where's the coleslaw?" And I'm like, "Oh my God!"
Right.
How hard is it to put coleslaw in the bag? My God. Yeah, I get like that all the time.
So,
or
I mean,
when I say
I've thought about going back and really raising hell, but I've never done it and never especially gotten physical.
And I know, like, how many times have I wanted to drive back and go, you know what? I said no onions. No onions. Does that look like no onions to you? But
exactly.
I don't. I just pick the onions
off.
I
don't want to drive all the way back.
No, I don't want to drive all the way back. I'm lazy like that.
And calling does nothing.
All right, we'll talk to Josh Martin, NBA next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio. And YahooSportsRadio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, let's focus on the NBA. We've got about five games left in the regular season, and then it's off to the playoffs. Josh Martin joins us from Bleacher Report to talk everything about this association. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. How are you, Tony?
I'm good. As I said earlier, there's five games left for a lot of these teams. Golden State needs like four wins to set the record. I don't know what the percentage is and the chance of them getting this. Do you feel good that they'll end up getting the 73 victories?
I think they will. You know, the margin for error is still small if you're talking about going 4-1 when you've got two games left against San Antonio. But you figure the Spurs, at this point, with the way Greg Popovich approaches things, he's not going to have his full team out there for both of those games, if either of those games. And, you know, the Warriors, they're in their minds, they're certainly playing for something, even if the teams they're competing against aren't. And I guess the Grizzlies, who they play a couple times, are still trying to play for some seeding. But, you know, Golden State is trying to wrap this thing up. I'm sure they want to end their great season on a high note, just as they've been on a high note pretty much from October on. And they want to start that postseason run on the best foot that they can possible.
All right, so here's San Antonio. They've got two games with Golden State, as you mentioned. They've got the second seed locked up. They're all good. Popovich can rest guys for health, and he also can rest guys from a strategic standpoint of not showing too much. These seem legitimate reasons to not put out your best possible lineup. But I'm sure the NBA hates this idea. Does the NBA have a legitimate gripe here?
You know, I think this is a situation where the NBA, if it wants to complain about anything, it's got to look itself in the mirror and think about what's the point of having such a long schedule when you realize that towards the end of the season, for most teams, for a lot of teams, especially nowadays with the way that teams really understand player health and the way they're tracking everything, tracking wear and tear, that, you know, teams are not going to put their best players out there all the time. That's just the way it goes.
All right, let's get to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here's Russell Westbrook with triple-doubles, but this is a team that cannot close with fourth-quarter leads. Is this a concern for the playoffs? Is this a legitimate concern down the road for the playoffs?
I think so. You know, we've seen in the past that the Thunder in the playoffs can get the job done, but this is a different OKC team that we're talking about in a lot of ways, not just personnel-wise, but you got a different head coach in Billy Donovan. And with the way that this team plays and the role that Russell Westbrook has taken on, this team, this is clearly, at this point, a little bit more of Russell's team. At the very least, he's even with Kevin Durant on the hierarchy. So I think if you're the Thunder, you have to be concerned about your ability to close out games, because they're going to be in some tight ones against probably San Antonio in the second round. And, you know, depending on how things fall, they might even wind up with Portland in the first round. And that's a team, the Trailblazers with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, that is going to execute down the stretch. Through the Thunder, you can't afford to make those kind of mistakes in crunch time. You have to take care of business if you want to compete in a cutthroat conference like the West.
Let's go to the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers. I've had a lot of fun picking on LeBron James and all the little antics that he's doing, but nevertheless, as we head to the playoffs, how would you describe the mindset or overall health of the Cleveland Cavaliers as they head to the postseason?
You know, I think they'll be fine overall. You know, all this stuff we've heard about in the regular season has been a lot of fluff, in my opinion. It's just the machinations of a team that knows what it's playing for. It's playing for a championship. It's playing for a title run. And, you know, obviously not everyone can be the Golden State Warriors. It's funny, when you talk to people around the league, they're really surprised that the Warriors, in a lot of ways, were able to do as well as they've done this season coming off a championship. Not having that hangover. It seems like the Cavaliers have gotten all of those hangover situations themselves. But, you know, I'm sure they'll be fine come playoff time. They're still the most talented team in the East, even if they're not 100%. We saw them last year be able to get through the playoffs without their full arsenal of all their players. And I'm sure as long as LeBron is standing, they'll still have the best shot of anyone of coming out of the East.
Josh Martin joins us, Bleacher Report, as we go over the NBA. Speaking of those teams that will try to go after Cleveland, I would like to look and see Toronto as a legit threat. Is Toronto a legit threat in the playoffs?
I just can't see it right now. Yeah. You know, we haven't seen Damare Carroll back in a long time, and you wonder if he's going to be back at all, and if he's back, in what capacity, because he's been out since early January, and really that knee that he had operated on was a problem going back to last year's Eastern Conference playoffs. So he's such a huge piece of it for them, or you would think in theory that he would be a huge piece of it for them. because of what he can do defensively, guarding guys like LeBron, like Paul George, those great wing forwards in the Eastern Conference. Not at power forward, so having a guy like Demare would have given them another option to go small, but you know, they have a great bench in Toronto still. They have a really nice team. It's just really going to be incumbent upon Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan to really take their games to another level.
All right, look, with 82 games, I understand there's ebbs and flows and injuries and all of those things, but which team let their fan base down the most, the Bulls or the Wizards? And these were strong playoff teams a year ago.
Yeah, I think you got to say it's the Bulls still, in part because that organization made such big changes coming to this year. They fired Tom Thibodeau, who they'd had a lot of success with. They bring in a guy in Fred Hoiberg, who they hoped would be someone who could take the team to another level, to kind of be their Steve Kerr, if you will. And clearly that hasn't panned out. That team is really a mess when you look at the roster and all the injuries and, you know, just the dysfunction there entirely. In Washington, they've had a lot of the same issues. But at least you're still talking about a young core with John Wall, Bradley Beal, and to a lesser extent, Otto Porter. That's a team that can still really compete with that core for years to come. Whereas with the Bulls, you're looking at potentially a teardown here and trying to figure out, do we build around Jimmy Butler? And if so, what kind of pieces do we put around him?
All right, if this league is sort of top heavy in terms of quality, meaning Golden State, San Antonio, and Cleveland are kind of really cut above everybody else, are there some teams that you're watching for in the postseason saying, look, they may only get to the second round or they may make a run at the conference finals, but boy, I'm looking for this team to have a really good playoffs?
You know, I would have picked Miami to be that team if Chris Bosh was going to be back. We still don't know if he's going to be back, so that's too much of a question mark, but even so, the Heat are a really intriguing team. They do have a lot of talent there, a lot of veteran talent, a lot of experience, and you figure there could be a tough matchup for a lot of folks. And the Thunder in the Western Conference, I know we've talked about them already, but when you have two of the top five or six players in the league, in Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, they give you a great shot to go deep in the playoffs, and it's going to be tough for them having to probably play San Antonio in the second round. And they do have a lot of weak spots on their roster, a lot of guys who are either offensive guys or defensive guys, not a lot of two-way players. But, man, I don't think anyone wants to go against KD and Russ in any situation because you know what those guys are capable of.
Josh Martin, again, Bleacher Report on the NBA. Five games left in the regular season, and then we head into the playoffs. Great talking with you, Josh.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to some good playoff basketball.
Well, I hope we get some good playoff basketball. I think this is still going to be a Golden State, Cleveland, San Antonio playoffs. I mean, that's where it's oriented. But I think there's some teams that could have some fun. You could enjoy some games. You can enjoy a series. Yeah, it doesn't have to mean much. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a team that fights with Cleveland for the Eastern Conference title or gives Golden State a threat. But if you're looking for some good series matchups in the early couple of rounds, I think some are setting up for that. But no doubt about it, I would be very disappointed if I had a Western Conference Finals that had anybody but Golden State and San Antonio. No offense to everybody else in the West, but that's basically the Western Conference Finals that I want. And in the East, I am looking for Cleveland to advance. I think they're more vulnerable than people think. Look, LeBron has been to, what, five straight finals coming out of the East. A lot of it is because he's the best player in the world. A lot of it is because the Eastern Conference is rather weak. But still, there might be some threats out of the East. There might be a team that pushes by just in a seven-game series. I just don't think you're going to beat Cleveland in four. You can get four games, beat Cleveland four games. But that still doesn't mean I can't enjoy Boston, for example, in the playoffs. And, you know, a team, you can't enjoy Charlotte or Atlanta in the playoffs, just that time that they're in their series. But still, I think this is where the league all year long has been about the Warriors, it's been about the Spurs, quietly, and been about LeBron James and the Cavaliers, and that's pretty much okay with me. I don't need seven or eight teams with a chance to win the NBA Finals. Coming up next, Greg Hardy really, really, really wants a job. So much so, what he said in his interview to try to get on people's radar, crazy. We'll have it next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. Greg Hardy wants a job. He's not getting any interest. He really wants to get back on that playing field. He had an interview with ESPN in which he said some pretty amazing things. You always say when you do an interview and you're going to admit to stuff, you better make sure you are really going to be able to back up any claims that you make. And sometimes it's not as serious as what Greg Hardy is talking about. Sometimes it's just kind of frivolous stuff. This is serious. We've got the audio for you as Greg Hardy tries to explain himself to try to clear the air, I guess, to GMs around the league involving a domestic violence incident with a former girlfriend. Hardy says he never put his hand on any woman.
I've never put my hand on any woman.
Ever.
In my whole entire life. No, sir. That's just not how we raised.
This was with Adam Schefter, by the way, of ESPN. Now, this is a very bold claim because if you all remember, this situation that Hardy is trying to clarify, quote unquote, occurred on May 14th back in 2014 with his girlfriend, who she alleges threw her in the bathroom, hit her head on the back of the shower wall. She fell in the bathtub. He then grabbed her by the hair and threw her onto a futon. On that futon were assault rifles. He then choked her and threatened to kill her. Now, there was a what they call a bench trial in North Carolina. He was found guilty of that, but it was thrown out on appeal because the girlfriend stopped cooperating. Now, he claims that this is a rather flimsy situation. But here's Hardy again saying, he's not saying he didn't do anything, but he's innocent.
I didn't say I didn't do anything wrong. You know, that situation occurred and that situation was handled. But saying that I did nothing wrong is a stretch. But saying that I am innocent is correct.
So what did you do?
I have no idea what that statement means.
So what did you do? Like, what was, okay, if you're going to admit that I didn't do anything, I never laid my hand on her, I never touched her, then what are you saying that you didn't do right? Like you're basically saying there was this situation. I could have acted better. I did some things that were wrong, but I didn't do what everyone is saying I did. I certainly didn't do the bad thing everyone thinks I did. Okay, then what did you do?
Yeah, I don't understand what he's trying to say here. To say that you're innocent, but you did something wrong?
Like, is some in his mind, is something wrong having an argument?
Right, I was going to say, that is yelling at someone wrong to in his mind? Because if that's the fact, then everybody in the world is wrong.
I mean, my wife and I have arguments all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I married a redheaded Irish woman who has a temper. I mean, I'm in trouble all the time. Do you understand? I'm in trouble all the time. I sometimes look to my kids to save me, okay? Like, I'm just like, uh-oh. So what is he saying? Because this is when you start dissecting this where, look, here's his intention, right? I know what I'll do. I'll go on ESPN and I'll make it, if it's going to be he said, she said, I will definitely make my he said statement. Okay, so this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to go on and get it on the record in broadcasting so that people could go back in the video. And he's trying to get it so that a GM will say, well, I don't have any evidence he didn't do it. And he says he didn't do anything. So I guess I could give him a second chance. May not be with the Cowboys, maybe with somebody else. But he's basically giving owners and GMs the, well, you can't say I did it. Because there's no evidence, there's no proof I did do this, so give me the benefit of the doubt. Even if you say, hey, there was a bench verdict against you on this, and yes, it did get thrown out when your girlfriend didn't want to cooperate, but nevertheless, a judge found that there was something there. It wasn't just two people yelling at each other. Here's cut three, just another statement. Want to make sure you know that Greg Hardy is innocent.
I will stop you there and say that I didn't say I didn't do anything wrong. You know, that situation occurred and that situation was handled. But saying that I did nothing wrong is a stretch. But saying that I am innocent is correct. Yes, sir.
Did you ever put your hands on her?
No, sir.
Never?
No, sir.
Never? Really? because pictures came out rather quickly.
Yeah, there was, I mean, those bruises on her neck that don't just come from, okay, maybe if you didn't use your hands, you used one of those assault rifles on her neck, something, because she had very visible bruises on her neck.
And if I remember correctly, she had bruises that were consistent with the story.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So she said, he grabbed me here and threw me there, and I hit this, and then he grabbed here, and she had bruises consistent with the story that she's telling.
The only reason he is not in trouble in Carolina is that she stopped cooperating. That's it.
Absolutely.
If she cooperates at all, he's found guilty and maybe spends time in jail. I don't know what the sentencing would have been. But if she cooperates, he's guilty.
Steve Smith, by the way, had none of this.
No, yes. And
former
teammate
Steve Smith.
That I really liked what he said.
Yeah, he had none of this because he played with Hardy with the Panthers and saw this. And then I guess he said, so I guess she tripped on the carpet or something. Now, his mom is a domestic abuse survivor. He experienced it as well, and he's having none of this Greg Hardy nonsense. Now, who prepped him for this interview? Because whoever his agent is it Rosenhaus? Because
I
heard it could have been Rosenhaus.
Yes, I believe so.
They did it. Now, Rosenhaus, I got to admit, he does a good usually does a good job with this kind of stuff. This is a terrible prep job. Greg Hardy is not prepared for this. He is not. He's just going to deny, but even when Schefter pushes, he says nonsensical things.
Right.
And look, again, I understand what they're trying to do. Create a cloud of doubt. You don't need it. You don't need to be completely exonerated of this, but if you create just enough doubt, somebody will go, yeah, he's still got Pro Bowl potential, and there's a cloud of doubt, so I'm going to give him a job. But I don't think he wanted here.